Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Survivor specialists John and McKenna are back to rewind this episode, this crazy, insane, wild episode of Survivor 46. Let's get into it.
McKenna, to get into this episode, it's so tough because there's so much happens in this episode. And a lot of it, there's new stuff that we see. We have the hide and seek segment, which I can't think of any straight comparables to it in Survivor history. But something like this has to have happened before, right?
Well, like, I feel like they play games like Mafia and things to, well, right. Some people don't know, but like Q is using that the same as some people might use something like Mafia to understand social thing. I don't know.
It's a stretch. Q's logic through this, and Venus as well, because Venus also has confessionals during this segment saying, you know, what this means about people and how they're responding to things. It's all a stretch, because let's be real, it's hide and seek. Yeah, sure, you might be able to figure out how competitive someone is by where they're hiding. But this isn't like, oh, I can tell exactly how you lie when we play something like Mafia. Like, it's so wild that this is happening. I imagine survivors do stuff like this all the time. I hope this actually starts a discussion in the survivor community about what type of things they do to pass the time while playing, because obviously there's a lot of downtime in Survivor. So it'd be interesting to see how other casts have done this. But this is kind of the first segment in Survivor history that's like this. And despite it being arguably one of the most entertaining segments of television we have had in years.
Yeah,
we don't have anything to compare it to, so this is our only chance to really talk about it on this podcast.
I mean, Q would be me. Like, I'd be like, let's play hide and seek, but just because I'm bored and really want to play a game.
Yeah. So,
alrighty, let's get into our outwit, outplay it, outlast moments. Outwit, we are talking about alliance implosions. So this plus one alliance that was formed with the journey, they keep voting each other out, and it's just not working.
It's a really interesting aspect of this season, because the question now becomes, was this ever really an alliance? Or were these people just agreeing to something that was convenient, gave them the majority in a tribe, and they kind of have it to fall back on?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, Mikaela, what do you think? Was there ever a point in this game where this six could actually be a six?
It's hard when you're on separate beaches like they are, and just trying to be like, all right, now we have to form all of our games together. Meanwhile, you know, like, Maria's got Charlie. Now Charlie is roped in on it, but, like, he wasn't originally in the plus one. You know, Charlie has been, and, like, all of these intermingling of relationships and alliances are different from what the plus one would want. The plus one is just, let's get everyone else out, then deal with us.
Yeah, it's so interesting, but I think that's really what leads into the group that I want to talk about in this, and it's a little different, because the example I'm bringing is an original tribe that was said they were going to stick together, but they were preaching this idea of being an alliance, and that's Kama from Edge of Extinction. I think, and specifically at this point, I want to talk about the Eric boot, because this is the point where it really becomes clear this tribe can't work together. And it's very similar to what we see with Nami just turning on each other throughout 46 at this point, but also just dissecting how Kama was this, like, very tight group. They go into the merge with huge numbers over Lesu, and they decide, okay, let's blindside Joe, get him out of here, because he's a massive challenge threat, and that's kind of what you have to do when Joe Engelm's on a season. You have to get rid of him the first chance you get that he doesn't have individual immunity.
Not in my opinion, but...
That's fair. I mean, arguably, but that tends to be the opinion that everyone has on seasons where Joe Engelm is involved. Yes. And then, logically, based on everything we have seen in the pre-merge of that season, plus that merge episode, Kama should be... seven strong at this point?
Yeah, set to, like, destroy the merge.
Yeah, they should be. But immediately, like, this is the first time that they actually have to work together on a vote, and it doesn't work. And instead, we have Gavin, who wants to make a big move, much like Tevin did last week when he wanted to take out Soda. And he goes after Eric. Like, Eric Haveman is just left out to dry here by his quote,
number one ally.
And that, it reflects so much to what we're seeing in 46 right now. Because as we go deeper into 46, and yes, there's this alliance. And again, it's questionable if it was ever going to work together. But we have now gone two straight votes And I mean, granted, you technically there's the Soto vote in the middle, but it was split drives, whatever. It doesn't really count.
Mm-hmm.
This alliance has voted someone out of it for two straight votes now with Tim and with
Tim. Well, Tim, if you're not counting Soto, you can't count Tim. Tim was
doing no. You have to count Tim because he's part of the alliance. And there were more people out from the alliance on that side of the swap last time too.
True.
So yes, there's an asterisk there, but this alliance is imploding on itself. And just like in EOE, I mean, hopefully, like it is in EOE, when we see the fallout of that, the following episode after Eric is voted out.
John, is that the one with the live tribal council that we're watching over on the Patreon?
Yeah, it is. You should definitely take a look because let me
see.
One episode of Survivor.
Become a patron so you can listen to this episode. We are talking EOE episode 8, Y'all Making Me Crazy. It will be up on the Patreon. The link is right on the screen right here. So please become a patron so you can listen to us talk more Survivor or more movies or more Amazing Race. Like, there's a lot going on over on the Patreon. And also, don't forget to like, subscribe, do all the things that you should be doing on YouTube as well. John, continue your thought.
So the big thing is that there's so much fallout, and I really hope 46 kind of follows that with what we have here, because what we see in Edge of Extinction as a result of Eric being voted out is there's so much paranoia, no one knows who they can trust anymore. And I feel like we're getting to that point with 46 as well now. And I mean, we'll talk about it a little bit more when we're talking about live tribals and everything, but just the information that was coming out in this live tribal in this week's episode of 46 can have a lot of repercussions. There can be, and as much as things seem to be in a spot where, yes, there was this large group, yes, there are these like smaller groups of tribes, but it doesn't feel like any of them feel comfortable with the remaining members of their tribe. Obviously, Nami all hates Venus. Kenzie and Tiffany are now super skeptical of Q. And based on the secret scene we saw, Maria doesn't trust Ben. So I'm hoping this will kind of follow suit with Edge of Extinction here. But that Eric Haifman boot just goes to show that these large alliances feel like they just have the numbers and they're impenetrable, but there are so many cracks when they actually get to the point where they are voting. And I think that's why we almost struggled a little bit finding examples of this, because we don't think of them as large alliances imploding on themselves. Instead, we think of them as, yeah, these people finally had a chance to vote each other out.
Yeah, exactly. So the one that I am choosing is Heroes, Healers, Hustlers. Basically, Ben implodes everything. He implodes all of his alliances. He has like his group that with like Lauren, Dr. Mike, where they think he's being the double agent to Chrissy, Ryan, and so then, you know, Chrissy and Ryan think Ben is with him, and then JP gets blindsided, Ben does a Ben bomb, and, you know, everything just kind of implodes in the, like, two or three boots with JP.
What's really interesting about this Ben example is Ben becomes a pariah in it, right? Where he becomes the pariah of the season, where everyone's just, like, blaming Ben for everything that happens because he's double-crossing people. He's working both sides. Do you think Q might end up as this, like, pariah in 46 now because of what he pulled at Tribal Council?
Either that or they'll keep using him, but the way he talks and speaks is, like, very mob bossy. So they might be like, I don't want to deal with this anymore. Let's let him go.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And I'm not 100% sure how it'll go. But what we saw in HHH as a result of this is, first off, JP goes. And the most interesting thing about Tevin going in this position as opposed to JP or Eric Haifman, like, Tevin felt like...
He's a character?
Well, yes, he was a character, but he also felt like really central to everything that was going on in the season. Arguably, Eric was kind of central. He was kind of that figurehead for the commas, but I think more people associate that with Ron Clark, and it transitions into Gavin through mm-hmm. that blind side. Whereas JP was kind of just there on HHH.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, because it leads to a bigger imbalance of power.
Mm-hmm.
But is these alliances just falling apart? That's the most interesting thing about this, because there is something, and granted, these are newer examples, right? These are all examples within the last 10 years at this point. This, I guess it's even more recent than the 10 years. It's the last like 10 seasons. But this is something that I think the further we get into Survivor and the more we have people who are fans of the game playing Survivor, the more we see people understanding these ideals of like, oh, I have to build an alliance,
mm-hmm.
but also being willing to be like, whatever, I'm going to say yes to every alliance and I'm just going to turn on it whenever I get a chance.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So like, maybe had Ben chosen a side, you know, mm-hmm. we wouldn't see the implosion here. Had, you know, Kama stuck to their words and like, all right, we're going Kama to the seven, things could have been different. But
it makes
for better TV in the end, that when an alliance kind of implodes the way that it does.
The weirder thing about Kama imploding is that there are such huge threats outside of Kama in EOD.
Mm-hmm.
And while the implosion in HHH can really be credited to Ben, who ultimately is a massive threat in that game, it doesn't feel the same, because it doesn't feel like people are neglecting the fact that they are big threats. Yes, okay, JP goes here. We don't know exactly what was going on the island. Maybe JP was a big threat on the island, but from the edit, it didn't feel that way.
Right.
But these implosions just lead to so much chaos afterwards. And that's where 46 is headed. It doesn't matter who's the best players. And like arguably, like the players on 46 might not be the best Survivor players of all time. There are some very skilled Survivor players on this season, but I think we're seeing a lot of messy Survivor play. Mm. And because of that, we're going to be looking at this episode and this implosion of this supposed six as probably a pivotal turning point in this season moving forward.
Yeah, exactly. So let's move on to our outplay moment, and we are going to talk about the challenge this time. We have danced around at these last few episodes. We haven't talked specific challenges, but we are talking this one. We are talking Get a Grip. It is a classic Survivor challenge, and I was like, we can't not talk about it. I know we've talked about instances before in some of our previous podcasts, but I want to, you know, deep dive two of them and also talk about this, where this challenge is where Jeff gives us the rice negotiation.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, watching it as a super fan, this is one of the most iconic challenges in Survivor history. I don't care if I'm out first. I want to say I played that. I did that. So for the rice negotiation to happen on like a really, you know, iconic Survivor challenge, I think in my mind would almost also lead me to what happened in 46, where people don't want to give up their shot at immunity because they either, you know, need to win or want to play in this challenge, feel like they can do well, seen it on their TV, seen Ozzy, Parvati, you know, these people win or do well in the challenge and want to try their hand at it.
I agree to an extent. Obviously, this is an iconic Survivor challenge, and again, leading more towards casting fans of the show, it does make more sense that they would want to compete in the challenge. That being said, this challenge is quite difficult.
Mm-hmm.
It requires a lot of upper body strength, especially now that we see those footholds getting smaller and smaller in this challenge. And there's a reason why the record that Ozzy set was over 2 hours long. Mm-hmm. And these challenges only last just over 20 minutes now. It's because it's not really the same challenge in all senses of the words, yes, the premise of it's the same, but it's not the exact same circumstances.
Right.
And, but because of that and the difficulty of the challenge, this does seem like the perfect challenge to have a rice negotiation at, because I think you want the rice negotiation. I think production wants the rice negotiation to happen, and I think they want people to sit out of challenges for it.
Mm-hmm.
So choosing this challenge where you're either good at this challenge or you're not good at this challenge. This isn't one of those challenges where you're like, ah, maybe I can pull it off.
Yeah.
Right? And we see that with like Q and Liz agreeing to step out, Charlie agreeing to sit out. They just can't get the fourth, which is great because we've had these rice negotiations for the last six seasons, and this is the first time it's been denied, which is fantastic. But this challenge is one you really need to ask yourself, what's going to benefit me more in this game? And that's what I think these rice negotiations should be, as opposed to, okay, well, we're just giving you food now.
Yeah, I mean, I think what they really lacked, though, is the fear tactic of the knife and the stabbing of the bed.
That is true. That is true. I honestly was like, Jeff, there's no knife this time. I'm severely disappointed. Because the dramatics of that was so intense. But maybe Jeff also realized, you know what, this is a one-time thing. Everyone's going to, like, love it, and then we're never going to do it again.
No! Bring back the knife! Yeah, so, like, for me, I would definitely want to compete. I don't think I would win it, but you never know until you try it. So, like, I feel like I could do well because I'm decent at, like, grin and bearing it and like struggle through the pain, and like it's mind over matter, and I'm so competitive that I'm going to try my damnedest to win, or I will fall off like Michelle and Andrea.
I think that this challenge is just a little different than, say, and I'm just saying this because it's an endurance challenge that I watched an episode of Survivor for recently, the ball on the bow challenge, right? Where anyone can really win that challenge.
The challenge that's in the Patreon episode that we watched?
Yeah, exactly. That's why it's fresh in my mind. But because of that, like, that type of endurance challenge feels like a bad challenge to do the rice negotiation at. Because everyone feels that they can win that. Because everyone can win that. When you get this one, ultimately, who do we see winning this challenge most of the time?
Venus.
Right? Venus is kind of the person you expect to win this. If we just look through the quick history.
Venus
of the
and Kevin are probably the...
Yeah, exactly. It's the... I mean, we look at like Aussie and Cook Islands when he wins it, obviously.
Tyson.
We have Harvey and Danielle, of course, in Heroes vs. Villains, which we'll get into in a moment. Even like Dee last season winning it. Right? Like, there's a very...
Oh, he has toes. All right.
Well, that's fair. but typically, someone like Hunter isn't the prototypical type of person you see here. And I think a lot of people equate Hunter as the big macho guy and don't realize how lean he is.
Mm-hmm. He's got thighs for days gripping that ball.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is impressive. Beyond and impressive.
Someone else who we don't think would have won this challenge, Twyla. First time we see this challenge is in Vanuatu, and Twyla wins the challenge. And she doesn't fall under that, you know, body type that would win this challenge. But the challenge is slightly different, as it is nowadays to the middle seasons. It had rope rungs instead of indents. So it was like you could kind of slip off of it in easier, maybe, but it also maybe gave you a bigger like lip to hold on to. This iteration of it is so different, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you like grip your thighs onto the pole, you kind of have a little seat with the rope.
Yeah.
You don't just slip down. So John, what are your thoughts on Twyla winning and like the very first time we see this challenge?
Well, first off, Twyla Tanner does not get enough respect in the Survivor community. So first off,
she gets in here at the specialist. Vanuatu,
she sure does. We love Vanuatu. But like you said, it's almost a different challenge. And it's kind of like how we were comparing it with like the notches being smaller now. With a rope, there's so many more elements to this challenge than just hold on for dear life. Because again, you have those hand grips, you kind of have those stopping points where like you slide down and like
you feel
grip that thing. Yeah, you grip that thing tight enough with your legs, you're clutched, you're sitting there and you're just like resting on this rope. But I don't know. This, I think this version of the challenge feels more like what you were saying, the grin and bear it, go out for it, and like just go as long as possible aspect of it. Whereas the challenge has evolved to a point where it's more difficult to do that.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I agree. I feel like what also people underestimate is the ability to feel where those divots are. And you see, you know, people scrounging to try and get back up, where here you can kind of nicely rest and, oh, there's the edge of the rope and I'm good. Or you, it'll help you grip to get back up the pole a little bit more. So it definitely has changed a lot since the first one. But John, you mentioned Heroes versus Villains.
I did.
So why don't we get into it for your outplay moment?
Yeah, so when I'm thinking of it, I think when we think of Get a Grip, the Heroes versus Villain is probably the most iconic version of it, right? Where you have Parvati just hanging off of the pole on like one hand, one leg, and just chilling there. And that kind of reminded me of what Hunter does at the end of this challenge, where he's just like showboating a bit. Obviously, it's mid-challenge when Parv does it, so makes a little more sense there. But there are other elements of this Heroes versus Villain iteration of the challenge that are kind, like, loosely connected to what's happening in 46. Primarily,
Squint a little bit.
Because the end of that challenge in Heroes versus Villains, we have Danielle and Parvati agreeing as to who's going to win, and ultimately Danielle gives the argument, Parvati, you have the idol. Like, let me have this one. And again, like, Squint really hard. And as Charlie is just about to lose this challenge, he's trying to get those rice negotiations going with Jeff again. And just the ability to talk at that point of the challenge and like try to agree to something is, it's kind of funny, especially because it just really went to show how in power Danielle and Parvati were at that point and how secure they felt that they wouldn't be targeted.
Yeah. And then also we have, you know, Venus, who's like, I'm gonna win this, and then all of a sudden drops down, like Candace, who Candace was just like chilling, and all of a sudden she's just like, nah, I don't think I'm gonna outlast them, I'm done. Not that Venus like did that, I think she really was struggling, but it was just all of a sudden Venus is now out, and like I thought she was my odds on favorite to win.
Yeah, and we even had Tevin saying that he was going for Ozzy's record and still kind of, like, can't do it either, right? It's interesting because, like, that one was more set up than Venus just, like, dropping out. Venus not even getting to the final three of this was kind of shocking to me. Like you said, odds on favorite to win just based on historical evidence of this challenge. And I feel like that was kind of the same perception of Candace in this position, where, especially because she was the only girl left. Well, that too. She played it before, had gone for a very long time, and she was the only hero left, and it was the merge. So it was really important for a hero to win that. And this is kind of where Candace's heel turn happens in that season.
Yeah, exactly. Anything else for Get a Grip, John?
This is a fun challenge every once in a while. I understand why we've gone to this point where it doesn't last for 2 hours anymore. But if that's the case, like, Jeff probably needs to stop comparing these challenges to previous challenges when they're not exactly the same. Because Well, it's just like that record's not fair at this point, right? The record of Ozzy held on for 2 hours, I think it's like 2 hours and 15 minutes or something like that, or at least that's the timestamp we have on it.
Right.
It's not fair to compare this iteration of the challenge to that, unless we see Ozzy do it again. Like sure, get Ozzy to do this just for fun, and we'll see. If he can still do it for 2 hours, okay, we can keep the record. But if it's a different iteration, like, we have to, like, put these asterisks beside these records right now, unfortunately.
Yeah, exactly. Alrighty. So here's the moment of the episode. The cover. We have Tevin. We have Julia Carter. We have Malcolm. Outlast. Live. Tribals. And neither of them outlasted Live Tribals. But... we are here, nonetheless. This was an insane tribal council, because what happened, I still couldn't tell you. I feel like I can tell you about what happened in my moment and your moment, but what this all was for in 46, no clue.
That's the interesting thing about this 46 live tribal. And live tribals have kind of become a malign thing in the Survivor community, because once they started happening a little too frequently. And we haven't had a live tribal council like this one since Winners at War. I would say in the new era, like, yes, we've had like kind of live tribals, but they haven't been to this extent where no one really knows what's going on. They are gaining new information in the moment and adjusting the plans as is. Now, we do see in 46 that they do just go Tevin in the long run. And whatever Q was doing was probably for naught. I'm really looking forward to that first confessional of this next episode where Q explains what his thought process was. Because I'm sure
we know he did. He had a perfect plan for this.
Absolutely. I mean, there's got to be some reason behind it, especially because Jeff Probst said Q saying he wanted to quit here felt different than Hannah and Sean.
It felt like it was a play, because he said the same thing earlier in the season. So Kenzie didn't play her shot in the dark if they had to go as a three.
Yeah. And we also saw last episode that Kenzie and Tiffany were joking about the fact that he was saying, Q's probably going to come and tell us to vote him out when he's like flip-flopping around who to vote. So clearly this is something that's been going on a lot on this Yanu tribe.
Yeah.
But I still don't understand where it got to. It feels like time just ran out on everyone and no one really solidified the plan. Mm-hmm. And that's why we get to this moment where Q's like, okay, I'm going to say this. And rather than all being like, okay, that's easy, let's just do that, everyone's like, no, Q, you're part of our plans. We're keeping you. We are going to figure out amongst us what's going on. And it's very similar to, I would say, now, based on definitions of live tribals, like, we can
getting up
here
and talking and
well and that's the thing is, like, most people I think at this point will define a live tribal as a tribal council where people stand up, they start talking and whispering to other people all over the place. For several seasons Survivor didn't give us subtitles for this whisper, so we had no idea what was going on. But like, arguably there were live tribal councils where like the vote kind of had to change based on conversations that were happening at tribal council prior to this, but the first real live tribal council is that one in Game Changers, where tiny one in Game Changers, which is a very exciting tribal council. And this is the weird vote in Game Changers where both tribes are going to tribal council, but they're only voting one person out. And JT gets up, goes and talks to Culpepper and says, because he believes he can flush their idol at the same time as like idling out Sandra and getting his target out. But he goes to Culpepper and says, yeah, they're voting out Sierra. Like, they're all voting Sierra. And then chaos ensues.
Yeah, yeah. JT gets Malcolm voted out here.
Mm-hmm.
And basically everyone lets JT know that. And he is labeled a turncoat, like all anything you can think of. And then he just leaves right after Malcolm because he's trying to preserve all of his relationships with everyone, new tribe mates, old tribe mates, and trying to just like let an easy person go out. Instead, everything blows up because of one chaotic sentence and Malcolm leaves.
It's very interesting as we get into this tribal council because you see moments where Sierra is trying to appeal to Haley about, hey, they're voting for me. Will you vote with me?
Mm-hmm.
And these type of things where they're leveraging their pre-existing relationships. So it's so wild because it's a really weird tribal. It makes sense that this is our first live tribal council because of the format of this tribal. The important thing to remember is, yes, both tribes were going to tribal council. They weren't able to talk to each other prior to tribal council. It's almost like Survivor orchestrated this type of moment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they expected it to get like this because for a long time, and remember, maybe they did because for a long time, Survivor did have rules that you weren't allowed to leave your seat at tribal council. So maybe they did at this point agree that, okay, you know what, people can get up and it's not part of the rules anymore. So maybe production did kind of like orchestrate this a little bit more, but it's wild because it kind of changed how Survivor was played for the next six seasons, where these became so free. There were three live tribals in Winners at War.
I hate live tribals.
I hate live tribals when we see them all the time. Seeing this live tribal in 46 was such a breath of fresh air because there was so much chaos going on. The editing was done in a great way to set everything up beforehand so that we weren't 100% sure where the vote was going. Obviously, Q being like, vote me out, was a totally out of left field. Never saw that one coming. But also, we have subtitles, so we know the conversations that are happening at live tribals now.
Mm-hmm.
It just made it so that there was so much intrigue, and I never felt that there was a single point in this live tribal council in 46 where I knew what outcome was going to happen.
Yes. I agree. Then you have, you know, Tiffany getting let in on that her name was out there. And I feel like the madness of the scramble almost equates more to Edge of Extinction, the episode we're watching over on the Patreon, where we deep dive it a lot more. So please go to the Patreon, become a patron, do all the things. We love you. Where, you know, the vote scramble, like it's everybody's ping-ponging back and forth here, where, you know, in Game Changers, JT is kind of the one to initiate and go over to Brad.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, in EOE, everyone gets up, everyone's moving, shaking, going all around, and that's kind of what we see here in 46, where everybody's breaking off into small groups and scattering and trying to come back and get a consensus vote.
Now, Edge of Extinction is prefaced with the fact that this is the vote right after the Eric Haifman vote, so Julie and Ron are feeling really on the outs because they weren't let in on that vote. It seems that like this comma group that should exist doesn't exist. Devins and David spend so much time working on Ron and Julie for this vote so that they feel comfortable working with them. And I think the most fascinating thing about this tribal council in Edge of Extinction, why it's phenomenal, and I mean, I say it over on the Patreon, but Edge of Extinction is quite an underrated season at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Ignore like the bad twist in the season and just accept it as part of the season. And like it's quite enjoyable because of moments like this. There is so much buildup in this tribal council to, you know, I mean, obviously, like, you know, if you realize what time it is while you're watching it, but you know something's going to happen because it starts with everyone just answering Jeff. And then it starts with, like, you know, people looking at each other and, like, giving each other nods and chuckling. And then it gets to the whispers as, like, other conversations are happening. And then Wentworth stands up. And
yep.
That's when all hell breaks loose.
And I think it's also forming. Rick is stirring the pot and just bringing it, and is just boiling everything and masterclassing this tribal council into, you know, spilling over the cauldron. He's using his little dash of the witch's coven in Wentworth, and then just, like, stirring the pot until it boils over and everybody starts scrambling and talking. And then it turns out to be neither of the two names that are on the chopping block. And it becomes Julia, who kind of throws herself under the bus with Rick's, like, twisting of words.
It's really interesting. And I know Phil has mentioned on the recap and also in Digging Deeper this week, you know, it's kind of a bit uneventful, this tribal council, because Julia Carter is the person who goes home, isn't a major player. And that's kind of where 46 deviates from it, with, like, Tevin was a big player, was someone we were expecting to go really far into the game. The big thing, though, the biggest takeaway that I have, and I think you had too, watching this episode again, McKenna, with this tribal council, is Rick's orchestration of it all. And just how 100%. Rick manipulates everything that's said in that conversation, or in that tribal council, to make things go a certain way. And I think Q thinks that's exactly what he was doing in this instance.
I know tribal councils can be boring. I mean, live tribals aren't really all that boring, but I know tribal councils can be boring. But I just feel like if you normally don't rewatch episodes or watch the episodes for the Patreon, watch this tribal council. Episode 8 of Edge of Extinction, because it is just beautiful. If you want to go on Survivor, watch this tribal council, because the way that he twists words and leads conversations, it's just a masterclass in how tribal council should happen if you're on the bottom or anything like that. So, like, I definitely highly, highly recommend, at least, if not watching the whole episode and then going over the Patreon, watch this tribal council.
Yeah, I think it's huge, because it's one of those things where Rick Devens is remembered as a character and not so much as, like, what he brought to the game. This goes to show you his social game and his strategic game here. Yeah. He set it up throughout the entire episode of working with Ron and Julie, gets it to a point, and, like, does he get lucky in this tribal council? Absolutely. Julia mentions that she was, like, confirming that the plan was to go with Wentworth, which he's like, oh, they're working together. That's weird. And then Aurora makes a comment about how Lesu could work together if they could just overcome their differences. And that's where Devens really runs with it. And that's why his performance in this tribal council is so masterful, and how it varies from Q. Because Q, it feels like Q is the type of person who wants to be driving every vote. It's been very clear of that throughout the entire season at this point. And it felt like his way of gaining control of this vote was saying, everyone vote me out.
Yeah.
And again, we're really going to need to see how he responds to it in this next episode to see where his head's at. But it's just not on the same level as Devens in that EOE tribal council.
Correct. Well, those are our outwit, outplay, outlast moments of the week. I do want to take a moment here to plug Dynamic Character Productions, our merge episode of Survivor. We put out bi-weekly, is that the...
it's one of those things where it's two times a week or every 2 weeks. It's a weird word.
Okay, well, two times a week we put out episodes We have a group of castaways who played Survivor over Zoom, and we put out episodes. The Survivor Specialist sponsored the Merge episode, so we just want to say thank you and shout us out. So if you want to play Survivor from the comfort of your home, follow us on Instagram, DCP_org. You could win a free month's subscription to the Specialist Patreon if you play. Who knows? All right, John, what do the Specialists have going on in the world this upcoming week?
We have a lot going on this week, like we do every week. I mean, obviously, over on the Patreon, we have Tylan starting up for Every Season Matters. So not very often you get to hear people discuss Tylan. So,
but it might be refreshing.
Yeah, it might be. So $20 patrons get access to Every Season Matters, of course. And McKenna and I talked about Edge of Extinction, Episode 8, Y'all Making Me Crazy, over on the Patreon today. That's there for $10 and $20 patrons. And, of course, McKenna and Stella Cena are going to be there with their amazing race coverage later this week. And when we get back on the main channel, obviously, Phil and Will deep dove this wild episode of 46. If you haven't listened to that, go listen to that. Yesterday, Brandon Donlan joined Phil and Blake for some digging deeper, and they also dove into a lot of elements from this episode of 46. McKenna, you and Phil covered the mega leg on the Amazing Race yesterday.
Yes, it was a lot of fun. Phil and I are having a great time talking about the Amazing Race, and it's just a good time podcast. So if you want to watch a good time show, watch the Amazing Race and catch up on our podcast.
Then on Sunday, Phil and Will are going to be joined by Caleb for the predictions and power rankings. That should be a great episode. Make sure you tune into that. Monday,
Phil and I. Breaking in all the 45 people here.
Yes. Yeah. all of them. We love season 45. What can we say? Phil and I will be talking Jojo Rabbit and the Great Dictator. You haven't seen that this week, so check that out on Monday. Phil and Will will be talking Deal or No Deal Island on Tuesday, and that brings us back to the
Survivor Wednesday 9
recap on Wednesday. And let's just say whatever happens, like, it's going to be worth watching. So
yes,
make sure 100%. You tune in. It's going to be fun. Thank you, everyone, and we will see you next time.
Goodbye.